Do you know what it's like to come back from knee injuries? Do you know the rehab process? Have you ever wanted something so bad and you don't get it? Can you imagine somebody sticking a microphone in front of your face? Like, so how you feel?
Right.
Women have instincts like no other species.
It's the future!
Down and Distance. It's on WGNplus.com.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Down and Distance, a.k.a. Daz. It's your boy, Jared Payton, alongside Sean M. Davis 1 on Twitter, exclusively on WGNplus.com. A lot of stuff going on. I know normally it's two dads talking about sports, but are we going to change that up today, Sean?
Let's do that.
You really want
a slight little curve.
What do you mean? You want to throw a curve in there?
Yeah.
What do you got?
We're going to make ourselves look a whole lot better today.
So do we switch it up with another, like, not a dad, but is it a dude or?
No, we get some beauty in the room.
Oh, we have beauty?
Yeah.
So kind of like Beauty and the Beast.
Exactly.
Or beasts, because it's me and you. Well, we have the wonderful and the beautiful Brooke Weisbrod in the building. What's going on, B?
Can I join beast mode right now? I kind of like that. I mean, I don't know how I feel about taking that beauty tag. I appreciate it. But yeah, I'm with two beast mode dads right now. So I appreciate joining this moment and hearing what this Down and Distance is all about.
Listen, I mean, this is what it's all about today. We're going in. We got four different topics. So we're going to go first down, second down, third down, and fourth down. And fourth down is normally talking about some issues that are going on with parents that parents have to deal with. But we'll figure it out as we go along. Let's go. First down off the bat. Derrick Rose made his return last night against the Magic. 19 minutes around there, 9 points. Spurts, I kind of knew after I saw the news flash on Twitter earlier in the day that he was going to be making an appearance, that he was going to probably not have his legs underneath him. That takes time. But to see there was flashes of certain things getting up and down the court where I was like, the knee doesn't look so bad. So the questions are, and especially on the newspapers, is, you know, Derek's back. What does this mean for the future? What does this mean moving towards, I think, 4 games left until the playoffs?
Yeah.
Where can this team go if Derrick Rose is healthy? I want to know both of your thoughts.
The question that I have for this team right now is, every championship team, at least in my eye, has to be great at something. There has to be something you can hang your hat on.
Mm.
What can this team hang their hat on? It can't be the defense.
No.
Not right now.
Historically, it's bad.
Pick and roll defense at top of the key, side pick and roll gives them problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the fourth quarter, you see Tibbs, because he doesn't want to put Joe at the four, he's substituting Joe and Powell out for one another. And he's going with Taj at the four, Nico at the three. And just the managing of the lineups is questionable to me. I don't know what he's trying to do. And he's just stuck in his ways. Last night, the execution, very poor. Of course, you look at it and you say, okay, if Derek was in the game, he doesn't commit the turnovers that Aaron Brooks commits. Right? Aaron Brooks missed Powell in the paint a couple of times on ball rotation, swinging the ball back around. And you look at that and you say, okay, different outcome. But the point is they were up 15 points. And a team that we have high expectations for should be able to extend that lead and maintain it with a team as poor as Orlando.
You know what I think they're missing? I think they're missing the killer instinct.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a team full of nice, talented NBA final contender guys. Like, I think the talent is so right there, but you know, Derek is this quiet leader. We've been waiting to see when he's going to come back. And you know, I think kind of my opinion of his role now is I see him as a role player. I see him as, we know what you're capable of, but we can't expect you to do it all the time. So when I need you, I'm going to look down and whether or not he starts, whatever it is, like, if I'm Thibs, I'm looking at him saying, these are the minutes I need out of you, because I think you got to put him almost in the corner, in the sense that you got to back him down and really engage him. Like, Derek's so quiet when he speaks to us, right? The media and all these kinds of things, but his game can get pretty loud. But I'll bet you his confidence level is about a 0.5 out of 10, because he doesn't trust his knee. He doesn't know what speed he can go at. He's out of shape. He's like, he doesn't know where he belongs.
It's hard. Yeah, I think not just right now. I think his whole experience since he's been in the NBA is, I think there's always going to be question marks as an athlete, and knowing after being injured and trying to be able to trust a certain part of your body, whether it's, you know, I had bad ankles, certain times where on the field I should have made a cut, but I was actually scared because I didn't know if I made that cut.
Right, because the last time you did.
Well, last time I did, that's how my ankle, and you know these things. You play these things over and over in your head. Only way that you can do it is by going as hard as you can, and it's easier said than done to kind of forget about that stuff.
Yeah, how'd you turn that off, though?
It's...
You have to psych yourself out,
you
right?
You have to.
You do.
I mean, but to me, it was knowing that there was somebody that was behind me that could come maybe take your spot. Derek doesn't have, I don't think he fears that. I mean, he's in a different situation.
Well, they haven't threatened him at all.
He's in a different situation. I was feared that someone could come and I might not play anymore. Yeah. So I had to cut it off. His situation has to be, it's him against him. I mean, I believe he's tough enough. I hear people always talk about he's not tough. What do you mean? This dude, do you know what it's like to come back from knee injuries? Do you know the rehab process? Like going through a rehab? I never messed up my knee, but I walked through a training room and saw people who had bad knees and saw what they were doing and walking out sweating. And I wasn't even on the table. So you can't tell me he's not tough. It's just all this stuff has happened to him. He's just kind of got to figure his way out. Like, listen, it's going to take me some time to get back, you know, back into shape. I mean, but that's me against me. So an extra time. And I believe he'll get himself ready. The hardest thing, like you said, to turn it off about the knees. Can he do that? We'll have to see. But I think anything's possible.
Now that the defense has slipped, the deficiency of the offensive sets and the offensive fluidity of the Bulls' offense, spacing, everything comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
You look at last night, the offensive sets that they had, if the first option wasn't open, the play broke down. And then all of a sudden, okay, Aaron Brooks, make it happen. Well, with the Spurs, it's option one.
Mm-hmm.
And they know what option two is.
They know what option 25 is.
Exactly. And that's what you want to see. That's the type of execution you want to see from a championship team down the stretch. Of course, the Spurs have been together forever.
Yes.
Especially with Ginobili, Parker, and Tim Duncan. Then the Bulls will give this group. It's been year one. And then you see Mirotić. It's kind of hard. Mirotić has been a beast in the fourth.
Yes.
You have Derek. You have Jimmy that you can go to that's becoming a go-to
guy. Dude,
now as a coach in the fourth quarter, it's kind of hard for Tibbs to say, okay, who do I depend on? Especially when Derek comes back.
Yeah.
We can't hang our hat on our defense anymore because we gave up that to go and get a Pau Gasol. Or to go and get Nikola and bring him over.
Question for you guys. I mean, you never want to see injuries happen. You don't want your star guy to go down. But in the case of what has happened this season, it seemed like there was injuries from the beginning of the season where guys were nicked up. Joe was, you know, still trying to find his way. But in a way, Tom had an opportunity to kind of something that he doesn't normally do, go down the bench and kind of extend and try to find. So you had guys like Mirotić who got a chance to play more because of injuries and all this other stuff. But Sean, to your point, still haven't kind of figured it out yet. And that to me, that it was like, this is kind of the perfect time to figure out where your team is going to be with your star player who is coming back to kind of fit in and let him kind of fit in where it still seems like there's pieces all around.
This is where you start to see the spillover from the lack of continuity from the GM, Pax, Gar, on down to the head coach.
That's a problem.
When you have those two battling,
mm-hmm.
and they have issues, it spills over because you look at the court and you say, okay, you have all this talent. You talked about
but
it,
but there's no philosophy.
There's no philosophy. What are we doing?
What are we doing? Who are we?
Who
just
are
like
we?
The Bears, right?
Exactly.
What identity are we going to be? The Bulls are... The skill levels of everybody has risen. Like Mirotić, I mean, we saw the potential, but nobody thought. I mean, I saw Jimmy would have a great year. I just kind of saw something in his eyes, know how hard he worked. And so his year doesn't surprise me that much. But now how do we take all that collective talent and organize it and turn us into the Spurs? Because right now we have a bunch of guys with great talent. And we got nowhere to go and no way to organize it. And it's like, but you guys just, you know, move and be unselfish and defend and like just work together. Hey. Man, you're so good. You can win a title.
Yeah.
You know, it's so frustrating.
The first thing they have to do is stop turning the ball over.
Yes.
Yeah.
If they stop turning the ball over, that will improve the outcome by at least 5 to 7 points.
I agree.
Easy. Don't turn the ball over.
So that's where we're going to start with number one. First down is done. I mean, that was a nice little drive there. kept it going. Sean, thank you so much, man.
It's just second and short. Like second and three right
second
now.
Second and three. Oh, we're good. Let's go to second down then. I'll let you talk about this one because this is college basketball. This is right in your wheelhouse.
It's very, very interesting because we go from upset of Kentucky on Saturday night and unfortunate comments concerning Frank Kaminsky coming from Andrew Harrison in the post game. He since then has apologized for those comments. But then it was interesting to see, and we talked about this, and to realize that we're still dealing with 19, 20-year-old kids because the way that Wisconsin acted, especially with Bo Ryan, his comments after the national championship game, and Frank Kaminsky giving his one-word answers for a couple of the questions, you start to realize this is 15 minutes after one of the most devastating moments in the lives of these kids, and you want them to answer questions in a certain way, truthfully and honestly, and you're going to get the honest and truth of it, which is this sucks right now.
Yeah.
Like, this sucks. Like, don't ask me about Frank Kaminsky right now.
Yeah.
Like, I can't stand him right now.
Yeah.
And that's the honest feeling that you and have that, as an athlete.
And that was his mind, right? Exactly. And then out of his mouth came. I don't know, you know, how you guys felt. I looked at that and that was like, my initial reaction was like, oh, what? Huh? What did you say? What did you just call him? And it's like, it just made me laugh in a way that I was like, I wasn't uncomfortable with it. I was just like, oh, I can't believe he just said that. But what it meant to me, the way he said it and the tone and how it wasn't him addressing the media member directly, right? It was under his breath because Karl Anthony Towns was answering the question.
Right.
How I felt about it was, okay, Frank got to him, right? Frank frustrated him and he was like, man, instead of just being like, F that guy.
Right.
It's the same connotation.
Same connotation.
Yeah. The wording was poor, obviously, but him calling Frank that, in my opinion, is a billion times different than Frank calling him that.
Oh, without a doubt.
Right?
I don't know. People viewed it the same way. They tried to make it into a racial slur. It's kind of hard.
Oh, what if Frank said that? He would have... No, that's not... That didn't happen. Don't compare it. I can't stand that.
It's difficult because, you know, there's certain times where I have a hard time speaking about certain situations that I've never been through, right? Like you can't... Sometimes you just can't speak on certain things. But what Kentucky was going through at that time of being in that press conference, I've had that feeling before. I've been undefeated.
No, you've been a back-to-back national champ.
Yeah.
And had it snatched.
And had it snatched.
But you've been in his seat.
Yeah, where you won every game that season, and you get inches. And not even just inches where the game was over. I got a Tostitos chip on my head running to the end zone. And I'm running to the end zone. I see a flag on the Jumbotron.
Mm.
And we had to go back to play and ended up losing that game. And the emotions inside that locker room, there were certain people who it is hard. Because Sean, he hit it on the head, man. It's you have 19, 20-year-olds. Who are going through something, who have invested so much time, where people don't, most of the time, don't know how much time you're invested, especially in college. I mean, student athlete, they always talk about student first. You're really almost you're the athlete first, and you have to kind of find time for school.
Right.
That's what they want you to do. And you're putting all this time in and to have that snatched away. And then you ask these young kids who, in my senses, no one's perfect anyway, but we're talking about 19, 20-year-olds, some 18-year-olds. Like, how you feel at this moment, you're going to get that. And sometimes you're going to get it. And if you've never been there, you have to kind of put it into perspective of your life. Like, have you ever wanted something so bad and you don't get it? Can you imagine somebody sticking a microphone in front of your face? Like, so how you feel?
Right.
What do you mean, how I feel? Are you serious?
Yeah.
It's tough to have everybody answer the way that you feel like they should answer. Was he wrong? Should he not have said it? Yeah, he probably shouldn't have said it. But it's difficult, man. That's why I love this podcast. I just want people to think of outside the box a little bit. I understand when you hear the initial, what he said, yeah, it was wrong. Maybe he apologized. But try to look at his situation and where they were at. It's a tough deal, man.
That's why I have a huge problem with Bo Ryan. Not because of what he said, but because you are supposed to be the face of this program. if someone is supposed to handle a situation like this, if someone is supposed to handle the adversity the way it's supposed to be handled, to give an example to the players in your program, mm-hmm. it's supposed to be you.
Yeah. But I
so
think
you don't come up after a game. I don't even have a problem with what he said about the officiating. I think everybody in this room
yes.
can agree that the entire tournament had poor officiating.
Terrible.
Horrible. Get over that. He won with horrible officiating.
Yes.
On Saturday night versus Kentucky.
Yeah, Nigel Hayes got lucky.
Exactly. Some things yeah. went his way. That's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. But you have to be able to face the music and stand up there with integrity and say, look, we didn't get the job done. He complained about the officiating. That's not the problem. He complained about some other things. He went at fifth-year transfers. He went at one and done. Some people say he didn't. My problem is when you come into that situation, you can't open the conversation about officiating. And then when the media questions you about what you said, then you backtrack.
Yeah.
Hey.
And you accuse the media of trying to trap you.
Listen.
Now I start looking at you saying that's kind of cowardly because you can dish it, but you can't take it. And I have a problem with that. And that's not good for the face of a basketball player.
I get you.
It's not good.
And, Brooke, you could tell me if I'm wrong or not. But Bo Ryan, 67 years old, he's having the same feelings as these young kids up there because he knew how close he was. He knew the roster and this team that he had. This was his shot.
This was it.
You might not have another team like this.
His true feelings came out. You know what his true feelings are? The best two chances I had at winning a title were interrupted by freshmen. Kentucky last year.
And the referees.
And Duke this year.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, good point. So, of course, he's going to be, like, bitter at the one and done.
Yeah.
But isn't it sort of like, well, I mean, you got to go get him if you want him, but nobody's coming to Wisconsin as a
– Your brand is not good enough.
That's a good way to put it.
That's it.
Brand is not good enough to get them.
And you know what? You start winning games. And I was thinking about this as I was leaving Lucas Oil. I was like, you know, what does this mean now? Because in football, I get it. When you win games you're in a national championship game, the spillover into next year of kids who are thinking about coming there – it keeps you on top of mind. So people are like, maybe. But those kids who are thinking about maybe being these one and dones, that's not what they're – listen, you might have a chance to get maybe now that you put – people want to know your resume. Like, who have you put into the next level? If guys are thinking about going to the next level, not only do they just want to go play at a program, they want to know that you've already put guys where I want to go.
Yeah.
If you haven't, then.
But Bo's getting different mentality, guys, to go there. I mean, you don't go play for Bo Ryan because you want to go to the league. You go because you want to develop and you love the campus,
yeah.
the Madison experience.
And you love the game.
And you love the game and you love the skills. I mean, Bo doesn't even go to shoot-arounds the morning of games. Those they operate it all on their own. It's like watching an army put in drill work. Or whatever it is. And then, you know, they do it by themselves and they come back later. Like, they like that. I think he festers in knowing he can develop young men. And, yeah, it's like he's got a totally different recruiting style,
yeah.
which is fine. But, yeah, you lost out to the one and dones. And, you know, it kind of sucks for him because that means college basketball is really, really shifting. And, I mean, Duke, the size of Duke. You think Wisconsin is big. Frank Kaminsky's 6'11". Dude, Jahlil Okafor is, man, yeah. Justice Winslow. I was like, dude, you look like you're like 28.
Yeah.
And you just can't compete with that.
It's difficult, man. What I got out of second down is people's true feelings come out. And especially at hard times when you invest so much into something.
That's when your character is tested.
Yeah, that's when your character is tested. And so. It's very, very difficult for these young kids, these young girls that are going through all this stuff to kind of sit there where they've invested so much time to just be like, everything's good. Man,
yeah.
We all have feelings. And everybody's emotions are different. So we got to cut some slack here and there. But own
just
up
like
to
it. Say that I told you Sunday how the game was going to go.
Yes,
and
it
went exactly the way I told you it would.
Ooh, second and short, maybe? Did you want to talk a little bit about UConn, maybe? Do you want to dive into that since
look,
we got Brooke?
Look, I'm done with Gino. Brooke, you can take this one. I'm done.
Because he said the men's game is a joke, yeah?
His comments about, no, really? some of his, and then Mark Cuban has made some statements recently as well.
Yeah, just about
talking about Geno was correct and how the way the game is played at the NCAA level just now hurts his players in the NBA, so on and so forth. Look, you want to improve everything, pay the kids. Give them a viable option. Kids will stay more than 1 year. If they have a viable option where they're getting something that they can only take care of themselves and maybe send a little something home. Stop being greedy. That's it. It's simple.
Oh, the NCAA is too greedy.
Yeah, stop being greedy. You want everything to get better? Stop being greedy.
Listen.
He's right.
You just hit me. It's like you just hit me with a sack of potatoes right there.
Well,
that's
you have
it.
Billionaires in the NBA talking about the college game,
yeah,
and you have the coaches that are making money from Nike and all these shoe deals.
But you have the
and
guys
who gets caught in the middle.
The players who are dealing with playing the game and not getting anything really in return. Where, you know, it is a tough deal, and I think you're going to have to if you want guys to stay a little bit longer. Because as a basketball fan and as a college fan, it's tough, man.
And you look at someone that we know personally. Look at the decision Cliff Alexander just had to make.
Yeah.
He's not ready to go to the next. He should be staying in school.
Yes.
Coming out next year. Guaranteed top 15 pick. But because of what went on outside of his control, a decision that somebody else made that impacted his eligibility, what else can he do?
Don't you feel – I understand that the money is there and that you – if you don't go, something could happen. You might miss out on that. But you know how it is. Playing college sports, there's really nothing like it. And missing out on that opportunity or that part of your life, it's just – I mean, you're looking at a guy who has everything, LeBron James. And big reason why he went back to Miami because he wanted to be with his boys. He wanted to have kind of like that college experience because he never had it before. Like, I would never give up anything. I was in Miami. Now, people say, you could have went all these other places. I would never give up my college experience for anything because it's where I learned the most. And you're asking a young kid who might not be ready to go to the next level because of whatever happened. He's missing out on that opportunity to be a college student. Man.
Yeah. I think there's definitely a place to pay these kids. I think the question, though, also I have, if we're going to pay them, then – are they then in turn responsible for paying the tuition for the university? You know, because if we're going to treat them as such, then pay them, then are they responsible for also their education? Or is it like, hey, this is, you're going to school, we'll take care of that. In addition, we're going to pay you this stipend. But what I would honestly love to see is to get them set up for after they're done playing or graduated. And then like, here's your kind of chunk of change. Meanwhile, we'll support all your living costs and give you a small stipend. Because like, it would be weird, honestly, to have Jahlil Okafor, a millionaire, for real, walking around Duke. Like, let's not put them into those
situations. It does. It's weird.
You guys played in college, so how was it? Like, you know what that football program in Miami brought to that campus.
A lot.
You knew you could look at somebody that might have been on water polo.
Yeah.
And you knew your efforts paid their scholarship. You knew that team existed because of your program. So did you treat them any different than players on the baseball team, which was another popular program down in Miami?
No, not at all.
Did you see any of that?
No,
because
I didn't see that.
Because it goes at the point that you're trying to make. You know, don't.
It is. That is the hard part. I mean, I've kind of fell into the same way that Brooks kind of talking. She's talking about the same vision that I had. I didn't know, but my vision was, set them up for after college, like have some type of
trust.
Yeah,
that.
Where they get this, and depending on how, you know, much that they're, because during school, while they're in school, I think that it just opens up a can of worms. But
you're
talking
really need
about
all that money in school.
Yeah, but
honestly,
I'm talking about if you're a top guy, you're Jahlil, and you know your jersey's selling, you know, you get some of that too. You know, rather than. You get some of that at the end. Or if they want to keep selling your jersey down the line, there's opportunity for these kids to kind of grab onto their brand and say, you know, well, yeah, let me do a deal with school once I leave here. You want to keep doing selling these jerseys with number 12 on them, but no name on the back, but people are buying them because of me? Come on, man. Let's
and
do
other
this.
Than that, I think giving those kids the ability to have their parents to be able to travel to games.
Yes.
Some type of stipend for that as well.
I agree. That's a great point.
Let's be honest. That
it's hard.
Yeah. Especially if your kid is a cross country.
Cross country, yeah. It's to me, that is a big deal. And I was very fortunate to have my mom who was able to, you know, fly and go places and go to games and all that stuff. And but some parents never really got to see their kids play, only on TV.
And it might actually level the recruiting playing field. Like, no one can say, oh, look, you know, you don't have a lot of money. You can watch your son play. You're from Miami.
Mm-hmm.
You can drive to Florida State every weekend, or you can drive to
we'll
Miami every weekend.
Give your family $1,000 stipend
exactly.
to get
now,
to
you say that,
each game.
And everybody has that.
You can drive anywhere for $1,000 if you have a car, I guess.
Now, exactly.
Or take a bus.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get somewhere on a bus for $1,000.
Now the options for travel, and that kid can make decisions without saying, man, I want to stay close to home so my parents can watch me.
The NCAA is such a closely guarded billion-dollar industry, though,
right?
It's so corporate. It's so eliteness, secret. You're not going to find out what we know and keep you at arm's distance and just do what we tell you to do, okay?
Yeah.
Just go out there and play. Keep your head down. Keep your mouth shut. And everybody's just about tired of that.
Yeah. I've been to a Final Four. You experienced the Final Four this past week.
Yeah.
The championship game, actually. And I'm still trying to get to a national championship game on the football side. But, you know, when you soak in that experience, then just think about all of the money you're looking at.
It's a lot.
Forget the game. Just step back and say, man, this is a lot of money being made right now.
You walk in like,
you can smell it.
Smells
right?
like money.
Yo, third down. I don't know where to go on third down. I don't know if this is too early. If I should make another play call or, well, something hit me watching the par three competition of the Masters the other day.
Pretty cool, right?
Yeah, Tiger Woods had his daughter putt for him. And he was DQ'd from the par three contest, but it didn't really matter because of that experience, you know, with his daughter and having his son out there as his caddies. To me, you talked about experiences, just going to those national championships. I look at this experience that Tiger had with his kids, and priceless.
Yeah,
I mean, priceless in. Especially watching him, you know, kind of grow up and being with his dad and how him and his dad were so close and golf kind of brought everything together from everything that Tiger has been through to where he is now as a father and what he's, you know, kind of had to overcome because we all have something inside of us that we have to overcome.
We all search for attention and love, right?
Always.
We all search for that. So you have to think this great athlete had this figurehead. That was all about love and discipline for him.
Yeah.
That's what caused him to be able to operate at the level of greatness that he operated at. And once that left in 2006, for the next 4 or 5 years, it was almost like he went away to school. You know, you have discipline, and then you go away to college, and you don't have that discipline anymore.
Yeah.
And sometimes you start making bad decisions. And
I mean,
doing
parents
things.
That don't let their kids go
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then, so that was like his life. For the next 4 to 5 years, he got caught up.
With hundreds of millions of dollars at his disposal.
I mean,
so
I
it was
that.
Easy for him to do it.
I mean, I tried to figure, I went through the almost, not the same thing, but I went through searching to try to find, you know, certain things after my dad passed because I was just, I felt lost.
Yeah.
I felt lost. I didn't have, you know, I still had my mom and my sister, but I didn't have that the discipline. My dad was when I talk to him, I think about my dad, he was, you know, sweetness. He was the greatest, but he was the disciplinarian for me. He was the one that made sure that I was on straight, that I wasn't doing I wasn't doing things I wasn't supposed to be doing. So it is tough. And you have to, if you don't have it, more than likely you're gonna go out searching for it somewhere. And what do they say?
With him, it probably came to his door.
In all the wrong places, looking for love, you know? It's what you do.
That's what you do. So now to see him, and then he tried to supplement it, right? In the middle of that.
Yeah.
He tried to use a relationship and his marriage to supplement it. And it's like.
He was missing such a part of his life that, you know, he felt like maybe having women would help fill that void. Like, it's like he could have turned into an alcoholic. He could have, you know. gone the Dustin Johnson route. He could have become, you know, a gambler, whatever it was, but it just so happened to be women. And 99.9% of athletes, I would assume, that's also one of their outlets.
But hold up. While he was going through that.
Yeah.
Dude, his game was at an all-time high.
Well, of course it was, because he could not do any wrong. I mean, if you have the most beautiful women in the world coming through your door every hour, your confidence is going to be pretty high.
I know, but confidence, yeah, but hold up, not even just, but the confidence, yeah, that could be there, but also the fear, how not, when you're doing those things, you always fear that,
no fear.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He didn't even think about his wife. In those moments, please.
He had no idea that it was going to come
crashing down.
He never thought it would crash down like that.
It crashes down on everybody.
We always hear what's done in the dark always comes to light.
Yeah.
But when you're in that moment, you're not thinking that.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going through his phone, opening up, you know, pictures, looking through Instagram.
He was at Perkins. If he was really at Perkins, it's like getting that good chicken.
If he was really thinking that, he would have been hitting delete on some of those messages. If you're really thinking about that, as soon as that message comes through, delete. Picture comes through, delete. But when you feel like you're invincible and you're not going to be caught, it's just like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matter of fact, I'll leave my phone out.
That's right.
You see this?
Yeah.
And eventually we find out, because we know.
Yeah.
She knows. She knew.
She knew.
Women have instincts like no other species. You know, men are men, women are women. And that, I mean, that changed my life. When it was a New Year's resolution, I was like, every decision I make from here on out will be 100% on instinct. And because someone I was with for a long time got lazy, I trusted my instinct and started to do a little investigating.
You did a little background
little bit. Okay. Yeah. And
dang, she went to
cheaters.com
and got that spyware.
Yeah, right?
You got that spyware. They
checking
everything.
Security cam and the teddy bear. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't go to that route.
I think you have to, though. I mean,
if you feel like something's going on, something is probably going on.
But for Tiger now, it's good to see him as a man to be able to experience the par three, because he hasn't played it. I don't think he's played it since his father passed.
I don't think
last
so.
Last time he played it, I believe, was in 2004.
Lindsey Vonn was out there, too.
Right. Yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
She had the sundress on.
You see, he's not rushing into that as well, though.
No,
he's
not.
He's learned his lesson.
But I think they're both good. I think they're good for each other. They're both, I mean, in some ways, they have to be. I think they understand each other. And it's hard to really, you go through what you have to go through. And if your significant other doesn't really understand kind of what you're going through, especially at his level, I can only imagine. I just know that it was my mom, the way she dealt with my dad at his when he was at the peak of his stardom. I mean, she was perfect for him, and she balanced him out, where that doesn't always happen, you know?
You know what? When he lost his dad, his relationships started falling apart. That's one of the things that came out today, or this week leading up to the Masters, is that how he's rebuilt his relationship with Mark O'Meara. Mm. Mark O'Meara used to be his best friend on the tour.
Yeah.
Right? That was that veteran on the tour that he could run things by. Or he could say, man, what do you think about this guy? How should I handle this situation? You know, when he got out there, you know, without that discipline, that relationship went away because of Mark. If he knew, he's a family guy. I can't be.
Tiger's trying to become a person.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is.
That's
trying. In his press conference yesterday, he tried to crack jokes, and everybody kind of awkwardly laughed a little bit. He's like, yo, you guys don't understand how hard it is, you know, how hard I work to get back here.
Yeah.
People get up and work all day, Tiger.
Yeah.
I mean, I
can definitely agree
with
that.
We all do that.
Whatever you do is going to be hard. You can't take the work out of work, right?
Maybe we don't, but we know. Yeah. Go ahead and tell us again how hard you worked, really.
Four down, man. Where are we going to go four down?
Well, you talked about it. It's a very interesting topic. You brought it up in the pre-show fight.
Which part?
Well, you were talking about social media, and you were talking about being out of GameWorks with Jaden.
It was a weird.
Is parenting affected now by social media?
Yeah, I think how you handle situations while you're out now.
As you know, we used to just get dealt with.
I know.
In the day. Back in the day.
Yeah.
I'm sure Walter.
My mom.
Yeah, in public, what was getting dealt with? Like if you didn't get something you wanted in the grocery store.
Oh, and I would throw
a fit,
man.
Yeah.
It would be like.
What happened?
I mean, it depends, man. Like you might get a spanking right there, or you might just get tossed up and taken out of the store. Like you did whatever.
Yeah, you got grabbed
and
moved.
But then if someone did see something, most of the time back in those days, that was common. That's just how business was done. That's how parenting was. Now things have changed a little bit.
Yeah, because back then, the person that was standing there, if there was an adult standing there watching, they probably were applauding.
Yeah.
Your parents saying, yeah, good job.
Good job.
Didn't even flinch. Get him.
Exactly.
No, didn't even flinch. Yeah. Now, man, I'm at GameWorks, and this is a couple months ago, and my son and I, we had a great time, and he wanted some candy after he won all the tickets. And, you know, we went in and got some candy, and I was like, listen, we'll get this when we get back to the car. And he just threw a fit and just falling on the floor. And, you know, I'm in Schaumburg, so I'm in my neck of the woods, man. People, you know, they know me and they're looking at me. And we got to a point where we sat down in this chair and he was all right. And he was still kind of like throwing a fit, but he was like talking to me like, no, no. And I'm looking at people that are around me. And like people have like their phones, but you know, I'm a social media guy. I use my phone all the time. So I'm watching them. It's like they were like looking at their phone, but I know they weren't just looking at their phone. Like they were like
you
holding
it. You can tell when somebody's taking a picture right. when they're looking recording. At the phone.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
Hashtag creepers. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And so it just brought to my attention that it's a different day and age now. And I really got worried. And I remember getting home and for the next like couple days, you know, I was like searching my name just to
make sure.
See,
yeah, like if someone
you.
Posted something, just right. so something, maybe they didn't tag me in it, but maybe they used my name and I could find it. And I was just worried because you don't know. And that one time could change everything. You know what I mean? That
someone's
one incident,
perception
yeah.
of the way you're parenting your son
yeah, could
change based on like, oh, look at, you know, even if they did tag it, right?
Yeah.
Look at Jared Payton being aggressive with his son.
Yeah.
Or
like,
look at Jared Payton taking time out to discipline his son.
Yeah. And like, they don't understand that my son is like Bam Bam. You know what I mean? Like wrestling with him and picking him up is like
that's
he can pick
do.
Me up. Yeah. Like he's a strong little dude. Like that's, come here, man. Sometimes use force to get him up over and get him out. And it just kind of scared me. And just the way that we, you know, parenting now and being out and how social media has changed that. Scary. Very scary.
The power has shifted away from parents, especially in relationship to their children. Children have so much power now.
Not way too much power.
They have the power to be able to say, my mommy did this.
Yeah.
My mommy did that. Now they're affecting the way you're perceived to other people. Right? You see teenagers all the time go to the internet. What was that, a couple of years ago? We saw a teenager sue her parents because they wouldn't pay her tuition to a private school. And then you had another set of parents that actually helped her get representation to sue her parents. Like, really? Like, how can another group of parents support a teenager to sue her parents
crazy.
Because they wouldn't give her what she wanted?
She probably had a real good case. You know, the way kids are now, I think they're so smart, so early.
Oh, wow.
They communicate way better than we all did when we were kids. You know, we would be like, I would be more likely to have an emotional outburst.
Yeah.
And true story, I called my mom a stupid pig at the department store back in the day. I was standing at the bottom of the escalator. She was at the top. Man, when we got home, whoa, was I sore. And then after I got used to spanking and didn't think that was like painful anymore.
Yeah.
And this only happened once. So it wasn't like, you know, my upbringing, but she slapped me across the face right in the middle of Kmart. And I was like, oh,
see?
Okay. Now, right. That would be caught on a security camera or whatever. But
now,
like, I deserved it.
But now.
Yeah.
I deserved it.
Yeah.
I had a real smart now. And you maybe there's better ways to communicate now, but that's how we did things back then. And I got the message and shaped up real
yeah,
quick.
And it wasn't
and it never
like,
happened again.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, spankings weren't, listen, the kind of kid I was growing up, if I wouldn't have got spankings, y'all probably wouldn't want to talk to me because I would just be, you
your
know,
mind would be
I was
somewhere
in, I felt,
else, right?
Yeah, I was already felt like I was entitled as a little kid because of who my dad was. When I was young, I would go up to my kindergarten teachers and be like, I'm going to tell my daddy on you that you hit me. And my teachers would freak out like, oh my goodness. He's going to go tell his dad. You know, they freak out. Where
yeah.
I needed that. And it wasn't, it kept us in check back in the day. There was no smart enough. There was none of that. Even grandma. Go to grandma and grandpa's down south. I mean, that was just the way that things were handled. And it wasn't, I know times have changed. And, yeah, even in my house, there's no, I talk a lot with my son instead of having to, you know, to spank him. I try to talk to him and, you know, we sit down when things happen. I try to talk to him and tell him why we don't do that. But another thing that I see in my household and what I is as a parent now, he's everything that he's seeing from that I'm doing is soaking in. So like the other day he came and like he kind of moved his hand and in some way he almost like my wife was taking away his iPad because we were leaving and he kind of put his hand on her and she my wife went to the bathroom and I brought him to a side and he's 3 years old and she was in the bathroom and we sat outside the bathroom. I said, listen, when your mom comes out, you tell her you're sorry. We don't put our hands on girls. We don't hit mom like that. We don't disrespect mom like that. Those are things that we don't do. And I tried to talk to him. And then when my wife came out, she came back to the table. He said, I'm sorry, mommy. I said, why are you sorry? He said, I shouldn't have hit you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hit you. I want him to know those things. Because I think those things are big too as they start to get older and understand.
Man, I'm hesitant. You know me. You look at my Twitter, you look at my Facebook, there's no mention of my family.
We talked about this.
I don't talk about my wife. I don't talk about my daughter, you know, because to me, social media is all about going at the vices of humans. We want attention. That's why there's a like button. That's what we want. So we'll post anything. We'll post pictures of ourselves, of our families. We'll post what we eat.
You're so right now.
Right?
So right.
So, yeah. And it's an easy trap to fall into. I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
It is an easy trap.
But you can get so used to it, then you'll start posting things that you really have no business putting out there, especially personal stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, you have to think about, you know, a lot of people post what they would do or they'll post a situation going on in their household with their child.
Then, I see that too.
And then
I'm
they'll
like,
say, well,
why?
I did this. Ugh. And then, you know, certain people are looking at it like, what?
That weren't there. No matter how you describe it in
exactly.
a Facebook post, it doesn't accurately paint.
Depict
I mean,
it. Yeah.
We could be in the same room and a situation could happen and we would say, well, that's not what I saw.
Yeah.
What I saw was this. So you're dumbing that down to its most basic level on Facebook.
Exactly.
Which is like the complain train, as I like to call it. But so many times too, it's like too much information, obviously with families, but like, don't let that out, you know.
Exactly.
Keep that special in within your own household.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even have kids, but I see too much of that.
And
from
it's like, you know,
family.
I tell Tiff all the time, she's welcome to post whatever she wants to post. I'm like, I'm with you, and you're like, yeah, we're headed too. Like, don't tell people where I'm headed. Stop. You know, like you, my dad, he's a minister. He's a popular minister. I go somewhere, Lil Davis.
What up, Lil Davis?
Hey, what up, Lil Davis? How you doing? It's like, you know, I was at the theater going to see Fury 7. I'm standing in line waiting on the theater. Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing? My wife turns to me and says, if your daughter was here, she would ask, do you know everybody?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that privacy of family, the ability to be able to parent without judgment of others is slowly decreasing and slowly fading away. And you don't have as much support from the community as you used to have. So it's difficult. It's very difficult right now.
But trends always swing back
they
around.
Do. We'll they do.
Know?
They do.
They really do.
It's different, though, I think, with this, with technology. I don't know. It's like it's changing, and so it's like changed us in the way that we see things.
How has it impacted, especially with you, how has it impacted the college game or the high school game and the way these kids approach their opponents or even each other as teammates?
They're nicer to each other, which is weird.
Okay.
You know, they all know each other in a different way, friendly versus, you know, the way we all used to go at each other. Like, I hated anybody that was on the other team. One of my best friends and I would play against each other, and she made me bleed, and I accidentally kneed her in a spot that wasn't exactly, you know, nice to do. I didn't mean to, but it happens. Hey, whatever. She won. Game's over. But, these kids now, they're super comfortable with their phones. Like at the McDonald's All-American game, the kid Steven Zimmerman did this great dunk where he had somebody stand in front of him. I think it was Dwayne Bacon. So Dwayne's taking a video, right, over his chest, and then Steven jumps over top of him to dunk, and they got the whole thing. We put it on TV, and, you know, they probably Snapchatted it or whatever. And it was like, it's unbelievable how comfortable they are with cameras in their face, with phones in their hand, because it's just, that's the way conversationally things happen. Yeah. But you know how I feel about it. If you're good, if you've got a good heart, if you've got good intentions, yeah. somebody gets you punishing your child on video and they want to do something about it. If you know you're coming from the heart, I'll be like, you judge me however you like. I really don't care. But like, it is scary to think about. Could you lose your job because somebody took a video of you spanking your kid in public? You know, that kind of, those kind of things would weird me out.
Well, it's definitely, now it's hard. Cause I would assume every NFL player now out in public with their child has to be thinking like Adrian Peterson. Like, they don't want anything. And we know how bad that was. So I'm not trying to make a comparison.
I know.
Let me preface that.
I know. I get
but
you.
But with that being said, you know, if you're out, you know, you snatch your son up at the theater.
That's right. That's where people's minds
you
go.
You know, someone gets him a videotape, their mind immediately goes to Adrian Peterson. So
you got to.
Yeah. It's difficult.
Well, listen, Brooke, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. This is cool.
On this
can
week of Down and Distance, we appreciate
we
you coming
back.
Through. Yeah, we'll have her back.
Definitely. She'll be like a constant feature.
Yeah, we have you back. And listen, you can come back anytime. It's all good.
Thanks.
All right. For myself, Sean M. Davis, one on Twitter. I'm at Peyton Sun, PAYT1SUN. Brooke, give your handle.
Yep. And, let's go IG, Brooke.Weisbrod, WEISBROD, or on Twitter, at Brooke Weisbrod.
And check us out. We'll be periscoping too.
We'll be periscoping.
Okay, we can do that.
Especially coming up to the NFL. Bing, bing.
Coming to Chicago. Chicago, you're on the clock, baby. We'll be back next week, man. As always, we were here. Now we're gone. Peace.